Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McKellen. There's a special place for the blind. It's a place where the blind can learn to independently travel from place to place. It's a place where the blind can learn daily independent living skills. And it's a place for the blind to cope with their vision loss and make new friends. That magical place is a blind rehabilitation center. One of the centers is the Hatland Center for the Blind in San Pablo, California. Patricia, or Patty Williams, is the Hatland Center's executive director. She joins us to talk about how the Hatland Center and other rehabilitation centers give the blind the key to independence. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good.
So let's talk about your role as the executive director. What do you do as the executive director at the Hatland Center for the Blind?
Well, I do radio interviews and, you know, other public relations kinds of tasks like writing newsletters, deciding how to update our website, and so on. I'm also involved with things like strategic planning, and I do a lot around our fundraising efforts with private individuals and granting foundations. However, the big news is that the Hatland Center has just merged with Junior Blind in Los Angeles. And I had a great deal to do with the merger, and I'm really excited about it, because they're really the ideal partner for us as we strive to further our mission, which is teaching more students independence through independent living. And I think this merger is going to help streamline our operation, allowing us to focus more on programming and students. So it's going to combine our strengths and our expertise. And I think it'll have a major benefit for all students, all without changing one single thing about the program. We're going to keep our name, our mission, our staff, and our program. So nothing's really going to change. But I worked a lot on that kind of thing, too.
And tell us a little bit about the Junior Blind. What do they do?
Well, our mission and our cultures are pretty similar. They've been around for 60 years. They started in 1953, and one of our founders was Mike Cole, was one of their first kids who went camping. They have a camp down at Malibu called Camp Bloomfield, and they have a program similar to Blind Babies, and where counselors go out to see parents of just born blind kids to help them kind of get started down that road. And they have also a residential rehab center called the Davidson Program for Independence in Los Angeles. So we both have rehab centers, and we're excited about sharing our curriculum and our expertise. I think we can learn from their tech center. They can learn from our curriculum because we were the first transition program ever in the country. And so we're looking forward to collaborating with them.
Who is Mike Cole?
Mike Cole is a, as he would say, a person of the blind persuasion. And he was one of our founders at the Hatland Center in 1972 and one of our first living skills teachers and was my partner for many years. And then he was our executive director for, 15 years or something. He worked here for maybe 24 years, and then he became the administrator at the Orientation Center for the Blind in Albany, which is the third rehab center in the state of California. And now he's retired. But as a kid, he grew up in L.A., and so he was one of the founder of Junior Blind. Norm Kaplan was, he was like a father to Mike Cole. So, you know, the relationship goes way back.
Let's get more into the history now, the Hatland Center. Give us a little bit more history and of the mission and the goals of the Hatland Center.
Well, we were started in 1972, exactly 40 years ago, here in San Pablo, California, which is in the East Bay. And the idea was really the brainchild of our founder, Dr. Philip Hatland. Dr. Hatland was one of the very first teachers when blind kids were mainstreamed into public schools. But he started seeing a number of his old students graduating from high school who were still living at home about that time. And when he talked to them, he found out that though many had academic skills, they didn't have the skills they needed to live independently. So that got him to thinking, and he came up with the idea to create a program where young people who are blind or visually impaired could learn the skills of independence by actually renting and living in apartments in a real community. Now, what you need to know is that at that time, that was considered to be a very radical concept. People were asking us, what? You're going to expect young people who've never lived alone to shop for and cook their own food using sharp knives and gas stoves? You know, you're going to expect them to travel around the community and take care of their own needs and expect them to pay their own very real bills like telephone and rent and gas and electric? So the skepticism and the blindness field among the professionals was pretty darn strong in 1972. But, you know, I happened to be one of the first staff of young sort of idealistic teachers, and all of whom were chosen by Dr. Hatlin, and we just figured, you know, we were all in Phil's army, and if he said it would work, then we believed it would. So we forged ahead with tons of enthusiasm and excitement. Mike Cole was one of the first teachers, too. And what do you know, 40 years later, thousands of young people have learned to solve their own problems, choose their own lifestyles, and experience the consequences of their own choices. So now, instead of being considered this radical concept, the idea that young people who are blind can take charge of their own lives with confidence is not only considered to be an acceptable service delivery model, it's actually kind of become the gold standard for rehabilitation transition services all over the country.
Now, Patty, of course, the Hatlin Center is located in the East Bay, which some of our listeners in California may know. That's the eastern part of the entire San Francisco metropolitan area,
yes.
Or as many may know, the Bay Area. And that is actually east of San Francisco. You mentioned that the Hatlin Center teaches a lot of independent living skills. What are some of those independent living skills out there that the Hatlin Center teaches?
Independent living skills are all those skills needed in order to function successfully in the world without needing the help of others. So, you know, that includes cooking, cleaning, care of clothing, financial management, self-advocacy, orientation and mobility, safety skills like food safety or earthquake safety, for example, and adaptive technology. There are actually others also, like braille, social skills, recreation skills. So when you can plan a menu, shop for and cook your own food, shop for clothing, use laundry machines, make a business telephone call and get the information you need, or, you know, when you can go online and email your counselor or family or friends, or buy a couple of tickets to a concert, and then you can go to that concert with your girlfriend on BART, and especially when you can learn to budget your own money and pay your bills, you've earned yourself, you know, a lot of power in this life. We always tell students, you know, if you don't learn to take care of your own money, believe me, someone else will take care of it for you. And you know, students listen to that advice. So we really enjoy watching young people step up to the plate and start to do things on their own. For example, we've had a lot of students who are scared to make business phone calls. And then a couple of months after they arrive, they're making their own plane reservations to go home for the holidays. And when you make them aware of this progress, they often say, yeah, you're right. You know, I didn't used to feel confident enough to do that. So it's just all of those kinds of skills are what we teach. And it's pretty individualized to each student, too, by the way.
So, now, how about cooking and cleaning? How do you teach these tasks to the blind?
Well, many students start with breakfast cereals and lunch sandwiches and microwavable dinners. So right from the get-go, they're fairly independent, although they might receive help from our teachers and our night supervisor if necessary. Also, during the first few weeks, our living skills teachers evaluate a student's skills and with input from the student, develop a series of goals that are achievable within about 3 months. So cooking lessons are added into the student's schedule each week, and slowly students start adding to their repertoire of meals. And often the oven is taught before the stovetop. For example, a student may first learn to explore the inside of the oven, the oven racks, the oven dial, and oven mitts, and maybe even practice putting a pan into a cold oven. But maybe that lesson will probably culminate in learning to cook a simple meal of something like baked chicken thighs and a baked potato, for example, and then the student would be asked to repeat that on her own over the following week. And we do track goals, and those goals are reviewed every few months, and new goals are set. And we always take into consideration nutrition as well as the kinds of dishes the student wants to cook. The students definitely help drive the curriculum. Students want to learn a lot of fancy dishes, and other students maybe don't want to do that. They just want to learn easy-to-make dishes that don't take much time. So, again, we individualize it for each student.
Talk more about how apartment living works at the center.
You know, we're located in a large 75-unit, three-building apartment complex in the shape of a Braille sort of letter Y with a swimming pool in the center courtyard. And the Hatland Center does not own the complex. And most of the tenants who live here are just ordinary folks who live in the community. And our staff rents two apartments for offices and one apartment for our tech lab and meeting space. Then our students rent eight apartments, two students per apartment, so they are truly living in the real world. They have to follow the apartment rules, pay their rent to the apartment manager, and so on. So, you know, we have 16 students at a time, although we serve around 35 per year since they come and go all year long. When a new student arrives, he meets his roommate, learns his way around the apartment, gets unpacked. But, you know, pretty soon the other students show up to introduce themselves because they're curious to see who the new guy is. Students visit each other often and become lifelong friends. In addition, our night supervisor keeps our tech lab open in the evening. And the tech lab is located, actually, in the large bedroom of one of the two-bedroom apartments. And we use the living room for group classes, informal social gatherings, chess tournaments, music nights, movie nights, potluck dinners. So that's our sort of gathering space. But, you know, some students also meet and become friends with other tenants of the building who have nothing to do with the Hatland Center. And sometimes students make use of the swimming pool in the courtyard, and they get to know other tenants on hot summer days. And staff is not here on the weekends, so students usually spend some time visiting or going out together on the weekend. So, you know, it's definitely students living in the real world in an apartment complex.
So I visited there during high school. And I learned that the center offers accessible technology classes. What is accessible technology, and how do the students use it in their everyday lives?
Well, accessible technology basically consists of any hardware or software that makes technology accessible to those who are visually impaired or otherwise disabled. Access technology helps our students in a myriad of ways in their everyday lives. For example, there are devices called closed-circuit televisions or CCTVs that magnify print for people who are low vision. Our students learn to search the internet to find BART, which is our subway system in the Bay Area, or bus routes and information. So they can search for, let's say, crockpot recipes as well. They can download music and books. They can type a college paper, read it back, and make changes. They can scan a school syllabus and then have it printed out in Braille or large print. And they can email friends and rehab counselors. They can use a GPS system to travel independently. They learn to pay bills online. They can print out a check to pay their rent. They can use a device called an ID-mate to read barcodes on foods in their kitchen or use it as a labeling device. They can use a small accessible computer, almost like a laptop, called a PDA or personal digital assistant to take notes in class or on the job and, you know, for many other purposes as well. And now, the really exciting thing going on is they can use Apple products like the iPhone, which are accessible right out of the box and which are opening a whole new world of accessibility. In fact, you know, I could go on and on about the amazing usefulness of access technology and how to transform the everyday lives of people who are blind and visually impaired. And And I also want to say that no matter how fast and exciting new innovations come at us, here at the Hatland Center, we're committed to keeping our Access Tech Lab cutting edge. It's really kind of our crown jewel. We're really proud of it. And the students, a lot of the students really get into access technology and become very good at it.
That's great. I've heard that this center is related to the California Department of Rehabilitation. What is the Department of Rehabilitation, and how are they and other departments of rehabilitation across the U.S. related to the Hatland Center?
Well, except for private pay students, which we do get on occasion, we have a student here from Australia right now, but most of our students attend the Hatland Center at the behest of their rehabilitation counselor, whether those students are from California or from other states. The Department of Rehabilitation, there's one in every state, and they're all part of a shop in Washington, D.C. called Rehabilitation Services Agency, RSA. So every state has a Department of Rehab. And so they have a central office, and then they have offices all over the state with counselors in them. So all of our students have rehab counselors. And most rehab counselors understand that before a consumer will be able to live independently and become part of the broader community, that he or she is going to need to acquire the basic skills like cooking and cleaning and financial management, orientation, mobility, all those skills, safety skills, and adaptive technology. So counselors often tell their students about residential rehabilitation facilities like the Hatland Center that can help clients acquire these prerequisites that will prepare them for their next steps like college or job training. In addition, departments of rehabilitation pay tuition for a student to attend centers such as ours and also often help students with the cost of access technology and college tuition where those items are appropriate.
So how about Braille? Does the Hatland Center require its students to learn Braille? And if so, how do the instructors teach it?
Well, you know, many of our students come to the center already knowing Braille, because I would say that probably 90% of our students are congenitally visually impaired. So they've learned Braille since they were 5 years old. They're already fluent in Braille. But that said, we do have some students who need to learn practical uses of Braille, and we do have a Braille teacher who is actually one of our graduates. So if a student needs Braille, they're scheduled for 45-minute lessons several times a week. That needs to be something that you do on a regular basis and have homework and so on.
Right. Now let's say there's an emergency. Say the student's unconscious or feeling really ill. Is there any special staff on hand to help out in these times of crisis?
Well, of course, we're all here during the day, and everyone on our staff has a CPR and first aid certification. And in the nighttime, we do have someone we call a night supervisor who lives on the premises and is available, you know, actually on duty from 4 to 8 or 5 to 9 each night, but also is here all night and can be called. But if a student's unconscious, you know, that could be a problem. The manager also lives here, is here for everyone in the complex, and the students each have a roommate. So we're pretty prepared for that. We also give a series of safety group lessons so that when students move here from here into their own apartments, that they're well prepared to handle most situations. And our safety classes include things like food safety, kitchen safety, indoor safety, outdoor safety, earthquake safety, first aid, self-defense, internet safety. That's our newest class. So we really do try to cover all of those bases because, you know, we're living in the real world here. This is not a campus of a blind rehab center where there's, you know, all kinds of safety nets. Our students are living in the real world. So we think a lot about that.
Awesome. What is the length of time for a student to complete their studies at the Hatlin Center? What are the requirements for graduation, and how long does it typically take for a student to complete the program?
Well, as I've been trying to say all along, each student's curriculum is completely individualized, and goals are set via these really extensive evaluations that students go through when they first arrive at the center. And so each student has different goals. And then we track those goals at meetings every few months to make sure that they're being met, or if they're not, do we need to change them? The student signs off that they're willing to work on those goals. And so that's how we track students. And when they've achieved their goals, then they're ready to graduate. Now, most students stay for 1 year. However, sometimes students, you know, people learn at different rates, and sometimes they're ready to graduate early. And every once in a while, we have someone that the Department of Rehab allows to stay a bit longer than 1 year for, you know, a month or two. But generally speaking, about a year. And then, you know, when they complete their studies, over 80% of our students move on to live independently in their own apartments. Many of them attend college classes, but some move back to live either with or near their families. But all of them are more in charge of their own lives than before they attended the center.
Excellent. Now, what if students have concerns about the Hatlin Center? Or what if they're facing any really tough challenges there, or even complaints? What should students do in these situations?
Well, students, first of all, each student is assigned what we call a financial advisor, an FA, the students call them. And so if they get a bill in the mail, they might say, I have to go see my FA. I got a, you know, a gas and electric bill I'm not sure how to deal with. But what actually tends to happen is that students tend to get pretty close to that one teacher. And or it could be another teacher, but if they have a complaint or a concern, they usually feel close enough to talk to one of the teachers about that. Or they often come in and talk to our program director or to me, and we certainly welcome that. In addition, you know, if there's a serious complaint, we, of course, our certification with the state demands that we have a formal grievance procedure. And that's required. So if there's a serious complaint, they can follow that grievance procedure and contact our board of directors or whoever about their complaints. But usually we're able to work out issues with the students. We're pretty good at listening. When they first come, they get a student handbook, and it lists our responsibilities and their responsibilities. And that kind of sets the stage for, you know, what the staff and the students are responsible for, and we say in there, you're welcome to talk to us about it if you have a concern or a complaint.
How about other facilities in the United States? How might our blind listeners search out for blind rehabilitation centers across the U.S.?
Well, as I said previously, each state has a Department of Rehabilitation or possibly a Commission for the Blind. And those would be the place to start. Now, I do believe that some states do not have a residential rehab center. So you can find that out from your state Department of Rehabilitation. And if they don't, and you're over 18 and ready to become independent, you can apply to some of the rehab centers in other states. You can apply here. We do accept applications from other states, and I believe some of the other programs do as well. In addition, there's a group of people, it's a professional group called Vision Serve Alliance, and it's made up of private agencies for the blind from all over the states, and they have a website you can go to and see their member agencies and contact them and see what they offer. So there are sometimes state rehabilitation agencies that are owned by departments of rehab, and then there are private agencies.
How can people contact the Hatlin Center if they would like more information?
Well, they can They can email us. You can email my program director, P. Maffei, Patty Maffei, and her email address is P, M as in Mary, A, F as in Frank, another F as in Frank, E as in Edward, I, at hcblind.org. Or you can call us at 510-234-4984. Or you can visit our website at www.hcblind.org.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to have this chance to explain our center and rehab centers, and I really appreciate your calling, and I hope all your ACB listeners across the country enjoy the program.
Okay. Well, Patty, this is great information for our listeners who want to take their first steps to becoming independent. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
You are listening to American Council for the Blind Radio.
By the blind, for the blind.